You are listening to 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. Stay tuned for the Heartland Labor Forum, radio that talks back to the boss. To the Heartland Labor Forum, a weekly show of news, information, and commentary by and for the working people of Kansas City. This show is produced by a team of volunteers from a broad range of workplaces and unions. The views expressed on the Heartland Labor Forum are ours and not necessarily those of KKFI or any unions involved. Tonight's show is being underwritten by Teamsters Local 41 and Roofers Local 20. Teamsters Local 41 is the largest Teamster local in Kansas City and the surrounding area and represents approximately 6,000 members in many industries, including freight, UPS, dairy, food and beverage, bakery, warehouse, car haul, car dealers, car rental, parking, and show work. We help workers and their families achieve and live the American dream. Our members are hardworking, patriotic, caring, family-oriented, and civic-minded, and we proudly support our men and women in uniform that put their lives on the line every day to protect our rights and freedom. And Roofers Local 20 apprenticeship provides the highest quality roof applicators in the region. Accredited by the United States Department of Labor's Bureau of Apprenticeship Training, our program provides Local 20 contractors with a workforce second to none. Craftsmanship and quality is what we do on time and within budget is how we do it. For more information on roofer apprenticeships, call 913-281-2527. And the Heartland Labor Forum and KKFI thank our underwriters for their support. On tonight's show, recently, workers in France and Colombia have shut down their economies when confronted with pension reforms which attack their livelihoods. Stay tuned tonight on the show to hear from union leaders in both countries about why they're in the streets and what's a general strike. In the news, Missouri Republicans file bills to get the Clean Amendment passed by voters, to gut the Clean Amendment passed by voters in 2018. And the Missouri Supreme Court knocks out the state's voter ID law. Our feature at the end of the show is Know Your Rights with Angie Williams. And guess what? She's going to be talking about impeachment. Now for the news.
And now news from our side, January 16th, 2020. In November 2018, Missouri voters overwhelmingly passed Amendment 1. It was called Clean Missouri, and it passed with 62% approval of the voters. Among other things, Clean Missouri changed the way legislative districts are reapportioned every decade after the U.S. Census is done. The change aimed at making elections more competitive because currently, many House and Senate districts are not competitive. The current map favors Republicans and has led to their veto-proof majority in the legislature over the past 10 years. In 2018, for the Missouri House of Representatives, nearly 25% of the district races were unopposed, signifying how uncompetitive they are because the difference between Democrats and Republicans in Missouri is not that great. In the past, redistricting in Missouri was driven by backroom deals, secrecy, and partisan politics. With the Clean Amendment, voters have put new rules in place to ensure fairness, transparency, and independence. This week, however, new bills were filed in the state Senate to undo these reforms and create new ways for political appointees to influence redistricting. If passed, they would have to go to vote of the people either in August or in November of this year because Clean was a constitutional amendment. The changes proposed are similar to the National Republican Playbook aimed at disenfranchising young people and people of color. They would put the power over redistricting in the hands of centralized political parties at the state level. They would privatize the data used to determine the legislative district maps and prohibit people in districts that have been packed to prevent competitiveness from suing and even draw districts based on who has citizenship and who is voting age. All this is aimed at tilting the playing field to favor older white people in rural districts. A group aimed at defending Clean Missouri is gearing up for a fight. Clearly, these bills will not make Missouri cleaner. Rather, it looks like they aim at taking a majority of Missourians to the cleaners.
Monday is Martin Luther King Day. Here in Kansas City, the big event will be at Palestine Missionary Baptist Church at 6 p.m., sponsored by the Southern Christian Leadership Council. For those who forget, King was the leader of that organization during the Civil Rights Movement. The featured speaker is Texas Congressman Al Green. He represents Houston. Green was the first member of the House of Representatives to propose that Trump be impeached. According to the Texas Tribune, in 2017, while Republicans still control the House, Green laid out a resolution pushing for impeachment for high crimes and misdemeanors, including Trump's defense of the white nationalists protesting in Charlottesville, Virginia, his criticism of NFL players for kneeling during the national anthem as a protest of police violence, and his retweeting of anti-Muslim videos from a far-right British account. Only 58 House members voted in favor of the resolution. His support grew some last year when he reintroduced an impeachment bill after Trump's demand that four Democratic congresswomen go back to where they came from. That was Trump's slur against them being women of color. It wasn't until Speaker Nancy Pelosi decided that the Ukrainian mess merited an impeachment inquiry that the House actually got on board. Now Green is being vilified by Republicans who use his enthusiasm for impeachment to accuse Democrats of wanting it all along in order to prevent Trump's reelection. It's probably a certainty that Green's speech here in Kansas City on MLK Day will be dramatic.
Question. When your union can't get enough leverage to make your employer do what he should, what can you do? Answer. Get the Democrats to schedule a debate in the place that you represent. Then get the candidates to refuse to cross a picket line to get to their debate. And voila, you've got clout. That just happened this week to resolve a 15-year struggle between CWA and its member technicians and CNN, which owed the members and the union a ton of money dating back to 2005. The threat of this was so strong that Democratic National Chairman Thomas Perez, a former Obama administration labor secretary, got CNN to cough up $76 million that it owed 300 technicians who it illegally fired in back pay and interest. Something similar happened in December, when Perez was called in to help settle a new contract in Los Angeles between a food company employing cafeteria workers at the debate site, Loyola Marymount College, and the union Unite Here, Local 11. Just so you don't think this is too much bullying, we'll recite a few of the details of the CNN dispute. In 2003, technicians working for a CNN contract subcontractor in New York and D.C. unionized with NABET, which is part of CWA. Instead of recognizing the union, CNN ended its contract and the contractor laid off the workers. CNN brought the work in-house and refused to bargain with the union as a successor. They fired long-term techs and unilaterally cut wages and changed working conditions for the rest. It also subcontracted some of the techs' work to freelancers. Even the NLRB said this was illegal in 2008, but CNN appealed and lost again at the appeals court level and refused to pay for over a decade. CWA President Chris Shelton commented that the whole experience shows why American workers need Congress to pass the PRO Act, a comprehensive pro-worker labor law reform bill about to be voted on in the House.
And the St. Louis Post reported that the Missouri Supreme Court on Tuesday delivered a blow to long-running Republican efforts to require photo identification at the polls. In a 5-2 opinion written by Judge Mary R. Russell, the High Court upheld a lower court's decision that forbade the Secretary of State from publishing information indicating photo identification is required to vote. It also said Senior Cole County Judge Richard Callahan made the right decision in 2018 when he jettisoned a requirement that voters without photo IDs sign an affidavit attesting to their identities. At issue is a 2016 decision by Missouri voters to amend the state's constitution to allow lawmakers to create requirements for voters to identify themselves at their polling place, including using photo IDs. The resulting law directed voters to present a valid photo ID or sign a sworn statement and present some other form of identification in order to cast a regular ballot. The affidavit also asked voters to certify that they knew Missouri had photo ID requirements and that the voters did not possess a valid form of personal identification. According to the opinion, one voter who presented a voter identification and signed an affidavit in 2017 testified the language of the affidavit was confusing and ambiguous because it required them to state that they do not possess personal identification when they, in fact, did have their voter identification card. Two voters testified that they would not sign the affidavit to vote in a future election, which is required for voters who don't bring a valid ID. But Secretary of State Jay Ashcroft's office said the Supreme Court's decision eviscerated the 2016 ballot question, which 63% of voters approved. That's the news from our side. The news tonight was read by Jen Zaman, Tom Gepkin, Michael Savoir, and I'm Judy Ansel.
A la huelga, compañero, no vayas a trabajar. Deja quieta la herramienta, que es la hora de luchar. A la huelga 10, a la huelga 100, a la huelga, madre, yo voy también. A la huelga 100, a la huelga 1000, yo por ellos, madre, y ellos por mí.
Good evening and welcome to the Heartland Labor Forum. This is Ariana Eckel. I'm a member of IBEW Local 124 here in Kansas City. Tonight we are going to be speaking about the recent large-scale strikes in Colombia and in France. First, we're going to be speaking to a couple of professors and economic advisors to the Central Union of Workers down in Colombia. We have on the phone with us Diego Guevara. He's going to be speaking to us about his experiences and knowledge of the situation there, as well as providing translation. And we also have Cesar Geraldo with us to speak to us as well. Welcome, gentlemen.
Welcome.
Thank you.
So,
thank you. Thank you very much for joining us.
I suppose we'll start with Diego, and then Diego can translate the question and give Cesar an opportunity to answer as well. Tell me a little bit about yourselves and what brought you to the movement, what your role in it is.
Okay, in the last 3 years, we have been economic advisor with Cesar Giraldo in minimum wage negotiations here in Colombia. And in first place, it was one of the main points of the last year strike, because actually we are looking for a better minimum wage in the country. And as the strike starts on November, actually we were one of the first point of the strike was a better minimum wage. So basically it was the first point that we start to get connected, but also as we are professors in the public university, we are connected with the student unions because also they were part from the strike. In the biggest strike, there were like many demands, many conditions that the people is demanding. So basically with Cesar, we are connecting with the CUT, that is the Colombian Central Union, as economic advisors, but also as professors, because we work in the public university and we are having a lot of problems with the budget in the public education. So I'm going to pass the question to Cesar in Spanish. Cesar.
Sí, la, pues este año, a finalizar el 2019, hubo una gran movilización en Colombia que se conoce como el 21N, que es 21 de noviembre, y que convocó pues a los trabajadores y a los estudiantes en un gran paro nacional y que se extendió por gran parte de las clases medias urbanas colombianas. Esa
let me translate, César. Okay, César is telling that the last November, the speech day called the 21st, and it means that 21st of November, that initially was a great rally, which was organized by the main workers' unions from the country, but also was organized from the students' union. At the beginning, supposed that will be just one day big strike. However, this strike start to go to the next week, and there start to be like more rallies in the upcoming days after November 21st. ¿Puedes seguir?
Sí, no, las centrales obreras, especialmente la CUT, ha convocado diferentes movilizaciones contra la política económica del gobierno colombiano, como por ejemplo el tema de la reforma de las pensiones, la reforma laboral, el salario mínimo. Esas movilizaciones históricamente fueron limitadas, pues solamente abarcaban a los obreros asalariados, que son una fracción mínima de los trabajadores, pero lo nuevo es que esa convocatoria se hizo para este 21 de noviembre y esperando que fuera una movilización rutinaria, resultó una gran movilización nacional y gran parte pues, de la reflexión es porque el país en ese momento se movilizó sectores sociales que son diferentes a los afiliados a la CUT.
There is something important in this new strike, and it's at the beginning there were some points that were remarked by the trade union, especially a pension reform that is upcoming in the country that is going to give a lot of power to the private pension funds, but also some labor market reform and also some reforms to the university. So it was at the beginning the main motive which the central union called for the strike. However, many people, even that is in the informal market, that are not really close to the labor unions, they also went to support the national strike. So at the end of the day, of the November 21st, nobody were expecting the huge and amazing size of this day strike, because basically the standard rally, the standard strike was the people who are affiliated to the trade union. However, there are different social sectors with different demands, not just demands related to the workers, but also related to ecological issues, also related to the peace conditions. So it's going beyond to the traditional workers. So it was because many sectors to support the unions in this rally. They were looking to pay, for example, in order to try to prevent the job unemployment. They were proposing that, for example, young people just get 75% from the minimum wage, for example, because it's the standard neoliberal idea that if you push the wage down, then you are going to try to motivate the labor market. So they were trying to unregulate or deregulate the labor market. So basically was labor market reforms and pension system reforms was there some of the original topics.
I see. Around how many people do you think turned out for the first action and for the following actions for the days after? How did things proceed from there?
Well, I mean, like the first day was like a huge day, even all the main commerce closed. Actually, was a great strike. But in the next 4 days, actually, most of the country was stopped. I think that how many people, I don't know, I don't know, maybe in the whole country around 2 million people or 3 million in the different cities, but for sure the rally in Bogota, that is a 10 million city, was around maybe 1 million. Let me ask César.
Sí, por ejemplo, en los días siguientes, no solamente salieron los estudiantes a la calle y los trabajadores, sino que mucha gente de los barrios residenciales y de los barrios populares salió a manifestar, y lo que fue interesante es que en la noche hubo un cacerolazo, que eso en Colombia no había habido un antecedente, y salieron prácticamente la mayoría de los barrios residenciales de las ciudades de Colombia a hacer sonar las cacerolas como una protesta generalizada de la población. Más que un paro, es un descontento social que se está viviendo en Colombia en ese momento.
César told me something that I forget to say that is really important, and is that after the first day, there was a social phenomenon that never have happened before in Colombia, and is that people, even in the neighborhoods, in the night, from the popular neighborhoods, the people went out with the pot and the spoon, and they start to make a lot of noise with pots and spoons. We call that in Spanish cacerolazo, because actually in Argentina 20 years ago, many families went to the street with pots and spoons, and they start to do a lot of noise. So some nights after the November 21st, there was like in many neighborhoods, in many places of Colombia, all the people were doing noisy with the pots. So in this, that we call cacerolazo. And what it shows is not just the social discontent, many things, not just from the workers related to the unions, because unfortunately we have a huge informal market. So when you have 40 or 50% of the population in the informal market, the people, they are not affiliated to the unions. But all these people start to protest, making some noise with their pots. So it was an important social phenomenon which shows the population discontent.
Yeah, it sounds like people just had enough altogether and reached a boiling point. So how did the government respond? How did the police respond to the actions that people were taking?
El gobierno, pues como tú lo sabes, creó una mesa de conversación con los sectores que participan en las movilizaciones. Conversación es distinto a negociación. Y pues el año 2019 terminó en punta en el tema de la negociación. Está comenzando el 2020 y pues la semana entrante, pues, o sea, digamos la tercera semana de enero, empezará otra vez la movilización social para desarrollar este proceso. Al momento en que se está grabando esto, pues no hemos terminado la tercera semana de enero y por lo tanto estamos como todavía en el periodo de las vacaciones, pero ya está, por ejemplo, para el lunes próximo, convocada ya una asambleas en los barrios, y ya empezará el proceso. En ese momento es incierto, en el sentido de que no sabemos si la fuerza del movimiento se mantenga o si la fuerza del movimiento se debilite, y también de eso va a depender la actitud del gobierno. El gobierno simplemente está diciendo que es que él tiene que hablar con muchos sectores y no está reconociendo al comité que se generó en esta movilización.
Okay, so the first response from the government in November, they try to establish a kind of talking table or a conversation table, but they were not trying to play in a negotiation table. No, at the beginning say, okay, we're going to hear you, but we're not to negotiate with the different sectors. So in the first days of November, what they tried to do was to establish this kind of conversation table to talk about the different social issues. However, they were not able, they don't have the intention to try to negotiate. So the first response, however, as the strike was at the end of the year, the strike entering holidays, let's say something like this, because like from here in Colombia, we have like the last 2 weeks in December and the first 2 weeks from January are holidays. So right now, probably the next week, the government is going to restart again this kind of conversation table. However, the trade unions and the students and many sectors, they are showing many discontent because they say, okay, we are not coming here just to talk about the social issues. We are trying to find some negotiations, and this is the main point. So basically, today, still, we don't know what is going to happen, but for next week in Colombia, we are hoping that the social movement and the national strike now can take off again, and maybe we're going to have some important rallies in the upcoming weeks. But it was the first response. And to the other question, unfortunately, for the first days of the rally, also the police were really violent on November 23rd. A young guy, his name was Dylan Cruz. Now he's like the symbol from the social movement. He was killed by the police. So in Bogota downtown. So now this guy was the symbol from the protest. And also there is a lot of controversy because the response from the police has been really, really aggressive. Also more than 20 people have important hurts in their eyes. Actually, many people have lost their eyes. So it's something, unfortunately, from the rallies and from the national strike.
I see. Okay. So in the next week, things are going to be moving again, and we will see where they go from there. So why do you think that Colombianos are so much more willing to stand up for themselves and take a stand and fight? What played a role in people standing up and coming together and, for instance, coming out of their neighborhoods beating pots and pans? What has motivated these people?
Sí, es un tema interesante porque lo que pasó en Colombia el 21 de noviembre del año 2019 es que sectores nuevos salieron a la protesta. En Colombia, tradicionalmente, el conflicto es un conflicto que se ha dado en la zona rural, en el campo, que tiene que ver con la violencia armada, con el desplazamiento de los campesinos, y la ciudad ha sido muda frente a esa discusión, en parte también porque la ciudad ha sido pues amedrentada, ha habido asesinatos, ha habido temor. Pero pues a raíz de las movilizaciones estudiantiles que se dieron en el año 2011 y de la movilización estudiantil que se dio en el finales del 2018 en Colombia, eso está reflejando que los sectores urbanos están empezando a hablar. Estamos hablando de, pues yo diría, de, no sé si llamarlo clases medias, pero personas profesionales con educación superior que están completamente flexibilizadas, que tienen una inserción económica muy, muy mala, o sea, muy flexibilizada, y que no tienen formas de expresarse porque no tienen mecanismos de representación, porque ni son pobres, ni son asalariados, ni son sindicalizados, y esos han salido a la calle como para expresar el descontento. O sea, nos queremos escucharnos y nos tomamos la calle porque no tenemos forma de expresarnos. Pero eso es un fenómeno nuevo en Colombia, pues que obviamente está ligado con lo que pasó en Ecuador, con lo que pasó en Chile, pero son las clases urbanas las que están empezando a hablar, que es un tema, un fenómeno nuevo en Colombia.
Okay, basically what Cesar say is that there is a new phenomenon in Colombia related to the social movement, and it's like the urban classes start to protest also. Unfortunately, here in Colombia, many uprisings and many conflicts were in the rural areas, and many people in the city were afraid to protest because even some years ago, 20 years ago, if you go to a street to protest, you were marked as guerrilla, as a terrorist. And right now, after the peace process, there is something new, and is that there is many people in the cities that they lost the fear to go to the streets, to go to the rallies. And it's not just the people from the trade unions, also is some kind of people who are professional, but however they are in this kind of flexible market with this kind of freelance jobs, so they don't have any representation. However, these people that they don't have any representation, they are able to go to the street also to support the social movement. So there is something new, that more people that even are professional or people with the graduate education, but that they don't have stable jobs, they are also showing their discontents in the streets, and they are also showing with the pot noise phenomenon many things, that they are not happy with their kind of freelance or flexible jobs. So basically something new, that there are like new kind of social classes that are in the street, that they don't have any representation, but they are supporting the strike and the movement.
Yes, a lot of the young people here also are being forced to work multiple jobs. You know, there's no prospect of retirement or any sort of benefits to do with the work.
Yeah.
And you're forced to try to piece together a living based on that. And that has also had a chilling effect on our activism. The instability really gets to you. So are we beginning to see a new pink tide in Latin America? It seems to be that things are not limited to Colombia. I've seen several other countries in the headlines with similar unrest.
Oh yeah. I forget to say that also Cesar also said that, for example, most of the movement although was motivated by the protests in Chile, by the protests in Argentina, by the protests in Ecuador. So also there is kind of social movement in the region, and mainly many young people that they have kind of precarious jobs, flexible, multiple jobs. It's people that they say, come on, I need to express my discontent. So it's something that goes beyond to Colombia, you're right, and probably the same phenomenon in many countries from the region.
We will be watching from the United States to see how this next week goes. Hopefully, with any luck, the government's view of this will move from conversation to negotiation. Is there anything that people that are concerned about your situation in Colombia can do to support you?
Sí, hay un comité pues, de paro que es el que está ha canalizado una serie de demandas al gobierno. Hay un pliego de demandas que se puede pues, consultar por internet. Hay diferentes tipos de organizaciones sociales que han estado movilizándose y sería pues, muy bueno que hubiera un contacto con esas organizaciones sociales, que hubiera una difusión un poco de lo que se está produciendo en esos espacios, hay videos, hay declaraciones, y que de alguna manera hubiera un diálogo con sectores sociales en los Estados Unidos, que también de alguna manera hay problemáticas que comparten, como por ejemplo, pues todo este nuevo mundo de la flexibilización y de la inseguridad social. Yo creo que ahí se puede generar un movimiento que puede ser, pues, continental, porque es una problemática que se está compartiendo prácticamente en América Latina y en los Estados Unidos, después del mundo de la inseguridad social. Y yo creo que ahí se puede trabajar un poco en explorar el concepto, en tratar de promover discusiones, en promover debates, porque de alguna manera hay las demandas, pero también hay poca claridad en el sentido de qué hacer, porque, por ejemplo, los órganos de representación del movimiento están muy ligados al mundo gremial sindical, pero los sectores que se movilizan no son sindicales. Entonces hay un problema de representación y eso es una buena discusión para ir tratando de aclarar qué se puede hacer en torno a eso.
Okay. César asked mainly one point, and he said that there are many charging demands from the young workers in the States that probably are the same demands from the young workers or informal workers in Latin America, which are associated to instability, but also to this sensation from uncertainty. So basically, you don't know what is going to happen with your job. You don't have a stable job. So probably one point is try to, okay, let's find which are the problematics that we can share, but at the same time, let's see, for example, here in Colombia, a good starting point, many social movements and also trade unions, they're generating many documents, many videos, and probably some social sectors in the States could get more information of what is happening here. So I think that the first step is more diffusion, because probably when you see the strike, you see like the general strike, but the things that you cannot take a look of the small details, that even there are many sectors that they don't have any representation, and probably the same thing is happening in the state. So if you have representation from the trade union, it's good, but also the trade unions should find a way how to connect to other social sectors that are in the world of the flexibility, and they don't have a standard representation. So probably it's a first step how to try to connect this kind of sharing demands.
I gotcha. Well, I'm going to do what I can to try to strengthen my connections in the area. I'll be seeing if either of you are on Facebook. Well, thank you very much for speaking to us about the situation in your country. We've been speaking to Cesar Geraldo and Diego Guevara. They are assistant professors at the National University in Colombia and economic advisors to the CUT, which is the Central Union of Workers there in Colombia. Thank you so much for speaking with us, gentlemen, and have a good afternoon.
Hello, this is Joseph Jackson. Join me on Cowtown Conversations, where we will discuss matters that impact your life as a resident of the Kansas City metropolitan area, every Thursday morning at 9 a.m., right after Democracy Now!
KKFI is hosting a community ascertainment forum on Thursday, January 23rd at the station, 39th and Main, Kansas City, Missouri's second floor. Community leaders will make short presentations about the activities of their organizations. Doors open at 5:15 and the program starts at 6 p.m. Please join us on January 23rd for the Community Ascertainment Forum.
Good evening and welcome to the Heartland Labor Forum. This is Ariana Eckel. I'm a member of IBW Local 124 here in Kansas City. And tonight we are going to be talking about the recent general strikes in both France and Colombia. And we have on the phone with us a French unionist. He is a member of the FOESR, which is the National Union of Higher Education and Research Staff. Mr. Sohier is a professor at the University of Versailles. Good evening and welcome to the show, fellow worker.
Thank you for your invitation.
So tell me a little bit about yourself and kind of what brought you to the labor movement.
Okay, so I was first unionized when I began working some time ago. Difficult to explain because it's very linked to the French situation. We had a big strike in 2009 in the universities to defend the statutes of the professors and associate professors. And this was something very important in my involvement in the union. I was a part of this strike. And actually, we won quite a lot of things during that strike. And since then, I have been a member of the National Secretariat of my union. And also, of course, I have organized in my workplace in the University of Versailles.
So your involvement with your personal union has kind of rolled into the current situation with the general strike there. What is the basic background? I know it's quite complicated. It's kind of difficult to follow from the United States as a non-French speaker. Kind of just have to go with what other people were willing to translate. So what's the short version of what's been going on in France that's led to this general strike?
Macron was elected 2 years ago with a program which is very anti-worker, and he's implementing one of the worst things he had promised then, which is to get rid of the current pension system. The current pension system is quite complicated due to the French history. We have many different systems, actually, depending on the field of the workers. For instance, the railway workers have their retirement earlier than other workers and in different conditions. And one of the problems was to set everything to the same level. The problem is that this level is lower than all the levels of the current system, which is why the French workers are very strongly opposed to this reform. This reform is also announced at a time when the Yellow Vests have taken an important place in France. This is a spontaneous movement that has arisen first against raise in the taxation of the petrol, of the oil for the cars, and they have taken a very important place in the political landscape of France with demonstration every Saturday for weeks and weeks. Right now, Yellow Vests are very present in the different demonstrations, the different rallies that unions organize against this reform.
Yeah, I actually did see a report not too long ago where one of your union leaders, I forget from which union, was saying that they welcomed the Gilets Jaunes with open arms as you have similar goals. So what I understand that union membership kind of works differently in France than it does here in the United States. Do you know roughly what your union density is there in France?
It's difficult to say. There is, if you read the papers, they all say the union membership and the union, the confidence in the union is decreasing right now. But what is striking is that during the strike, the last polls say that 61% of the French people, after 1 month of strike, 1 month without the metro, without the train, still support the strike, still think that, one, the objectives of the strike are justified, and second, that the strike itself is important and must go on.
So at this point, the general strike was called on what date? How long has it been going?
It has begun on the 5th of December. This is quite interesting to see how it has been decided for the 5th of December. These are the workers of the metro who are among the workers that are the most concerned by this reform, that have been on strike on September for first day.
Oh, wow.
The strike was huge. There were about 90% of the workers of the metro on strike. And they decided that they would go on strike, but this time on a strike that should last for several weeks on December, because in December they would have supplement in their wage. This is in the statute. Every December they receive one extra month of pay. And with this extra month, they could hold a strike for several weeks and even for more than 1 month, like it is actually the case.
You say the public is still 61% in support. Specifically, what are the stated aims of the strike? Is there any other aim besides halting the pension reform?
This is the aim that unite all the sectors, but there are also demands for each sector. For instance, in the higher education and research, there is a new law that will be passed just after the reform that the colleagues do not support, and which leads them to join the strike too. And this is the case in the higher education and research. This is the case in many sectors. For the train workers have just the current statute, the current equivalent of a contract that is that was actually that was used for the train workers has just been removed. All new hired, newly hired train workers will have a new contract starting on the 1st of January. This is something that also led the train workers to go on strike. And this is the case in all the sectors.
So tell me, this word that I hear, austerity, you know, we're facing a lot of the same sorts of attacks. The working class here in the United States is facing a lot of the same sorts of attacks as we're seeing in France and Colombia and other parts of the world. But we don't really ever hear the word austerity applied here in the United States. Can you tell me a little bit about what that word means and how it's used in France?
Actually, austerity is a word used by the government to hide the cuts that are imposed on all public services. The austerity, in French, the word austerité has quite a positive connotation, and this is why it has been used for decades to present the cuts that are made. But now everyone knows what austerity means in the mouth of our leaders or political leaders. And so the word austerity is very negatively connoted. And basically, yes, it is a cut. They speak about austerity. It is that the size of the classes is increasing in the education, that the number of post offices is reduced, and that villages don't have any more post offices. It is all that is termed austerity.
So what have things been like for the French people since the general strike has been going on? What have things been like for you personally?
For me personally, I live in Paris, so the situation is quite difficult because there is very few transportation. There is very few trains to go to work in the suburbs of Paris. There is very few metro to go to any place in Paris. And something the former French president Nicolas Sarkozy it's not the formality, it's the one before, said once that when there is a strike in France, you don't see it. And actually, right now, it is quite clear that everyone sees that there is a strike.
Yes, even over here in the United States, you know, we don't see a lot of news of that sort, at least not from our mainstream media sources. But, you know, word of the actions in France for the last year and a half, 2 years, we've been hearing about.
Yes, actually, the situation in the unions was quite complicated because the unions at France did not call to the strike. It has taken months for them to decide that they would call. There was a very important pressure from the rank and file for the strike. And this is what determined the configuration of the strike. And I was saying at some point that there are several confederations in France. All of them do not call to the strike. The biggest ones call, but the CFDT does not call, and it claims to be the main, the biggest union in France, which is quite difficult to compute, I mean. And this union does not call to the strike. Due to the importance of the attack by the government, it has called to several days of action, but never called to the strike, and right now is saying that the government has modified some points in the law, and that this is okay, they will approve the reform.
Out of curiosity, why do you think that the rank and file, that the people of France are so much more militant than the people of the United States?
I don't know if they are more militant. I think the history of France and the recent... I think in France... When I talk class, from the pension and the health system, what we call the social security. So attacking the social security is attacking all the workers. And we have a unified at the national scale system, which is not the case in the United States. So I think this is something... That explains why French are so much attached to this pension system. The last time we had such big demonstrations, maybe a little less big, I don't know, but it was in 95 when the government also decided to attack the pension system. This is something very deeply rooted in the working class in France.
Well, the French people's reaction to this latest attack and, you know, the French people's history are always an inspiration for the rest of us around the world, kind of like the United States at one time had an inspirational labor history. So is there anything that you think that workers in the United States may be able to do to support what's going on in France, to support workers there?
We have received some letters of support from American unions, and this is a big help. Because we know that we are not alone. We are fighting the same fight in the U.S., in France. I mean, in the U.S., there is no general strike right now. But we saw from France, I work in education, so especially working in the education, we saw that there were all these strikes in the education in the U.S., the Red for Red movement. And this was also inspirational for us. I mean, we have had strikes in France in the education, but not so massive, not so winning also, that the strike you had in the U.S. in the education.
Is there anything else that you would like to say regarding the strike in France?
Anything else I would like to say?
Or anything that we've missed?
Yes. there is something. I think that what I explained about the rank and file, also we can also see that in the General Assembly. Due to the fact that we have several unions, the General Assembly has a very important role in this strike. We see that the workers on strike gather in these assemblies and decide together what the strike is and what it should be and what the rallies should be and how to organize it. And this is something that is quite new in France. The importance of the General Assemblies had been quite reduced since the 70s. And right now they are taking all the place, and this is something that is very important in the current situation.
All right. Well, I sure do appreciate your taking the time to speak to us and illuminating from a French perspective, French unionist perspective, what's been going on over there. Thank you so much for speaking to us, fellow worker, and have a great evening.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Bye.
Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right.
Good evening, Kansas City. This is Angie Williams with the Law Offices of Angela L. Williams with another edition of Know Your Rights. Today, I thought we'd talk a little bit more about the impeachment trial that is ramping up in the Senate. So, as you may or may not know, there are two parts to any impeachment proceeding. There is the actual impeachment, which is the investigation and the charges, or the articles of impeachment, which are like the charges, that the House conducts and then presents to the Senate. Now, this is what happened today. Nancy Pelosi has appointed seven managers or impeachment managers that will serve as sort of like the prosecutors for this case. She focused on seven individuals that have both law enforcement experience and or prosecutorial or law experience in a trial setting. The president will be defended by his own lawyers in this case. Now, what happened today was sort of the opening ceremonies, if you will, about the impeachment trial. Now, what happened was the House presented the articles of impeachment to the Senate. And as you recall, there are two articles of impeachment. One has to do with abuse of power and obstruction for allegedly withholding aid from the Ukraine in order to get them to investigate Joe Biden, one of the people that is running to try to unseat Trump in 2020. The second one also has to do with obstruction and abuse of power, and that has to do with the stonewalling and failure to cooperate with the investigation by the administration after the investigation was. After the articles were officially presented today to the Senate, Chief Justice Roberts, who is going to act as the judge and mediator for this case, came to the Senate and swore in all of the senators. They all had to promise to be unbiased and impartial jurors and to uphold the Constitution, and then each of them had to go up and sign their name in the book swearing to this. Now, the trial itself is not going to get started until next week, probably on Tuesday, since Monday is a federal holiday celebrating the life of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. The trial will run in the Senate from generally Mondays until Saturdays, and will continue until it's finished. I would imagine there's going to be at least a couple weeks of testimony, and so I would expect there to be a couple weeks of testimony. Now, as you may know, only three presidents in history have been impeached. The current one, Donald Trump, Bill Clinton in the 90s, and Andrew Johnson in the 1800s. Now, neither of the two people that were impeached, either Johnson or Clinton, were removed from office, which is what the trial in the Senate is about. But they were impeached. If you think of impeachment more as like an indictment, that is what happened. So in the case of all three of these presidents and in the case of Mr. Trump, now he was actually impeached because the articles of impeachment came out after the investigation. Now, whether or not he's actually ends up being removed from office because of impeachment is a whole different story. Nobody yet has ever been removed from office for impeachment. Many people might be thinking, oh, wait a minute, but what about Nixon? Nixon actually was never impeached because he saw the way the wind was blowing and that the articles of impeachment would be coming down. And so he resigned rather than face the inquiry and the trial in the Senate. So starting next week, we should see some interesting information. They're still arguing about witnesses, but I think ultimately witnesses probably will be presented, but we'll have to wait and see on that. And then we'll ultimately have to wait and see on the decision. Now, if Trump doesn't get removed from office, that doesn't mean that he wasn't impeached. He was still impeached, but he just wasn't removed, which, like I said, nobody has ever been removed yet. That's all the time we have today. Kansas City, we're starting down a very interesting path legally, but also a very shaky path for our democracy. We'll talk more about this, I'm sure. This is Angie Williams from the law offices of Angela L. Williams with another edition of Know Your Rights. Be safe, Kansas City.
And now for the Heartland Labor Forum calendar. Wyandotte County Democratic Breakfast this Saturday, January 18th, 8:15 for breakfast, 9 a.m. for the speaker at Las Islas Maria, 7516 State Avenue in KCK. Speakers are State Representative Pam Curtis and Kansas Democratic National Committee Woman Teresa Garcia Cruiser. There's two women's marches on Saturday. The first is at noon at Mill Creek Park, 47th and Main, sponsored by Unity Southwest. The second is from 2 to 4 p.m. at the Mohart Center, 3200 Wayne Avenue, sponsored by many organizations, including ACLU, Planned Parenthood, and the Women's Political Caucus. There's a showing of the film Just Mercy Saturday afternoon at 1:30 at the Glenwood Arts Theater, 95th and Mission Road, hosted by Kansas City Call, NAACP, League of Women Voters, Moore Squared, A. Philip Randolph Institute, and the Greater Kansas City AFL-CIO. The 16th Annual Dr. Martin Luther King Bowling Celebration will be Sunday evening. It's hosted by UAW Locals 249 and 31 Civil Rights Committees, and that will be from 9 p.m. to 1 a.m. at the AMF Pro Bowl, 505 East 18th Avenue, North Kansas City. And the Southern Christian Leadership Council's MLK Community Forum Mass Celebration, January 20th, 6 p.m., Palestine Missionary Baptist Church, 3619 35th Street in KCMO. You can find our calendar and our upcoming shows and our archived shows on our webpage at heartlandlaborforum.org. Tune in next week to the show. We're going to be talking about 2019, a record year for strikes, and are we seeing a new labor militancy? And then we'll be talking to Eric Washington about football injuries. Thanks to tonight's engineer, Jen Zeman, and stay tuned for the Thursday night special.
Listening to the Heartland Labor Forum.
a show by and about workers, our workplaces, and our labor movement. We are radio that talks back to the boss, and you can talk back too. Send us your workplace stories, news, and ideas for shows to heartlandlaborforumkkfi@gmail.com. Our website, where we archive shows and post our upcoming schedule, is heartlandlaborforum.org. The views expressed on the Heartland Labor Forum are ours and not necessarily those of KKFI or any of the unions involved. Tune in every Thursday evening to the Heartland Labor Forum at 6 o'clock or to our Friday morning rebroadcast at 5 o'clock right here at 90.1 FM KKFI.